Welcome to the Wheel With It podcast with your host, Devin. At Wheel With It, we are dedicated to exploring DEI issues in a fair, balanced, and fun way. Let's get into the episode.
Hello, hello! Welcome to another episode of Wheel With It. My name is Devin Wieters. Today, we have a very special guest. We have the co-founder of Billy Footwear, Billy Price, with us today. He has a lot of great things to say. He was such a nice guy, and I think you're really going to like this interview. So enjoy my conversation with Billy Price. Hello, hello. Welcome to another episode of Real With It. Today, we have a very special guest. I am wearing his shoes right now. Billy Price, the founder of Billy Footwear, is with us today. How are you, Billy?
Oh, I'm doing great. Thank you so much for this opportunity to meet with you.
You are so welcome. Tell us about yourself, and then we'll go from there.
Sure. So I live in the Seattle area. I'm born and raised in this area. I am a wheelchair user. I broke my neck when I was a teenager, and when that happened, a lot of things in my world changed. So I have a chapter of my life where I was able-bodied without a disability. And then from the age of 18 going forward, I have been someone with a disability. And that path has kind of led me in a lot of different directions, which are some exciting and some challenging. So I'm excited to talk about it.
So do you mind me asking how you became disabled?
Yeah, not a problem. I can definitely answer that. I was a freshman in college and I was living in a fraternity and I fell out of a three-story window. So it was a three-story headfirst fall to concrete and it broke my neck and my lower back, a spinal cord injury in both locations. But the way the spinal cord injury stuff works, it's always the higher level, which really dictates what your functional level is going to be.
So how do you remember falling out of the window at all? Or
I don't. I went to bed and then I woke up outside. So that night we did have a party. So I had been drinking. So it was probably like some sort of drunken sleepwalk, or maybe I did remember it and the fall like knocked the memory out of me. I don't really know, but I do know that I don't remember the fall. And I remember waking up outside, really screaming for help and being very confused why I wasn't in my bed. But yeah, then someone actually came outside to ask me to help me inside and I couldn't get up. So they actually picked me up and carried me inside. And I slept on the couch in the living room through the night. And then it really wasn't until the next day that we started realizing that I wasn't in a good spot. That's when they called the ambulance and I went to the hospital.
So how was it like just like having a disability at 18 after not having one for so long? Because that must have been a tough transition.
It was. It definitely was. It was definitely a new area that I didn't have any connection to, nor really the tools to process going from an able body. I was a really independent kid. I was like playing soccer and baseball and skiing and hiking and climbing. And then all of a sudden going from that to a C6 quadriplegic, not really able to move my hands nor walk. It was a difficult transition. And it was really, I guess I would say it was more mentally toying just in my mind. All I could focus on was the stuff that I lost instead of the stuff that I still had. But people around me supported me and believed in me. And they helped me change my mindset, which was to let go of what I lost and instead embrace what I still had. And part of that was just the fact that I survived that fall. So still being alive, that was really where I started hanging my hat on.
So how did you like change your mindset and what was the rehab process like and all of that? What was that hospital phase like?
So when I was in the hospital, I was at the University of Washington Medical Center. So it was right off of campus at the University of Washington, which is where I was going to school. And I was an inpatient in the hospital for 5.5 months. So it was quite some time. To change that mindset, I really went to rock bottom. I was feeding myself just this terrible poison talk. It's not worth living if you can't walk. In other words, like I was convincing myself that my life was over. And it was just, there were a lot of nurses and doctors that saw potential in me. And from that, it got to the point where I just felt like I was on this dead end path, and it scared me. And then it just, that fear flipped that switch and made me think differently.
What was it like coming home from the hospital after that? Because that must have been a challenge as well.
It was one thing I realized was being in the hospital, everything was nice and flat. And then as soon as you leave the hospital, I realized that the world was not flat. There's hills all over the place. So pushing a wheelchair was another level of challenge, simply because in the hospital, like, there weren't really any bumps or anything. It was nice, smooth surfaces. And then everywhere I went outside of the hospital, it was just the opposite.
So
I was fortunate though that my parents' house, it had an unfinished basement, and there weren't any stairs to get to the basement. So when I came home, I guess I was one of those fortunate ones that they could make the accommodations to the rooms down there without having to go through a massive remodel. But that was still a transition. And then I actually moved back to school. I lived back on campus about a year later.
So how did you work that out?
By crazy luck, the fraternity that I joined, it was the only house on campus that didn't have stairs in the front. So I was able to actually roll into the house without any trouble. And that particular house also had a room on the first floor that was unfinished, and adjacent to that, it had plumbing. So they were able to actually make a room for me, as well as put in a bathroom. And that's where I finished my school.
That was really nice of them to do that just for you. That's awesome that they did that.
Yeah, it was tremendously generous. And I think it was very helpful for my mental state, in that going back to school, it just felt like I was taking on some more of that normalcy.
Is it still there? Have you been back? Is that room still there? Or have they gotten rid of it?
The fraternity is still there. It did go through a massive overhaul, a remodel. So that area is still there. It's just that room is not there in the same state, just because they remodeled the whole building.
Oh, so it's probably even more accessible now than it was when you went.
Most definitely. There's actually an elevator in the building now.
So tell us about your life after college and as an adult, and where you are now.
After college, during college, I had a couple of job internships. I was studying mechanical engineering. And then after college, once I graduated, the job market was tough. So I would throw out various resumes and stuff like that, but no one was really biting. But I did finally get a call from the Federal Aviation Administration. So it was a federal job, government job, dealing with airplanes. But my particular job was going to be doing air conditioning for the radar sites and communication sites down on the ground. So part of that, part of the infrastructure that helps communicate with the planes in the sky.
Okay, that's why I'm trying to turn this into a business, because I love doing this and I'm not getting any bites on jobs. But I've gotten so many emails from the Federal Aviation Administration, but I have never applied. I am going to go apply not as soon as we're done here, but I'm definitely going to go check it out.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I got turned on to the internships I had during college were with Boeing. So being in Seattle, there's a lot of Boeing areas in this area, plants. But when working at Boeing, they talked highly about the FAA being a great, stable, fulfilling career path. So when I graduated, there was actually a disability job fair in downtown Seattle that I attended, and the FAA was there. And I gave my resume, met some great people, but it was quite some time between that job fair and actually getting the job. I just felt like it went into this black hole, and just never was. I'd never get a call. So the fact that you're getting emails and stuff like that, yeah, I would highly recommend reaching out. They were fantastic working with.
Yeah, not, oh, we want your resume emails. If it was that, I would have sent it to them 15 times over. But those marketing, apply for a job with us. And I'm okay. So I've applied for hundreds of jobs, and it's been dry.
Yeah. Yeah, the FAA, I hope that works out for you. It was wonderful working with them. I was there for 16 years. And on the back three of those 16, that's when I started up the shoe company, Billy Footwear. That's when I started it up with my fellow co-founder, Darren Donaldson. And it was a side hustle. But it just kept growing. So we had to step away from our other jobs to be able to do the shoe thing full time.
So how did the business come about? Perfect segue.
Yeah. So the idea for the shoes, I think had been in me for quite some time because of all the, when I was going through rehab, I figured I had to do a lot of things, and certainly getting out of rehab and just being like back in the world, going through school and just being like, just living my life. I figured I had to do a lot of things, but the one thing I never figured out was shoes. I just didn't have the dexterity to deal with the laces, and every shoe that I saw on the market required you to shove your foot into a shoe. There wasn't anything that allowed the shoe to open up completely where you could just actually drop your foot in it, like just unobstructed. So I didn't know how to make a shoe. I had no idea like what that process would look like. Coincidentally, I got invited over to Darren's house for a Christmas party, and we were catching up, and he was telling me about a shoe project that he had challenged himself to learn how to do and make a prototype and start this little business that he was doing on the side. And when he was telling me this, I was like, oh my gosh, I got this idea. Because since being a chair, I've never been able to put my shoes on. And I just communicated that zipper idea. And it intrigued him. And he was able to work with the folks that he was already working with for his own shoe stuff to make a prototype. And when he gifted it to me, I was finally able to do something that I hadn't been able to do in 18 years. So I broke my neck at 18. I put my shoes on again independently at 36. And the moment was so special, we knew we had to share it. And that's really when Billy Footwear was born.
That is so awesome. I can get them off. I haven't really tried enough to get them on yet, but we're working on it. Cool. So tell us about the process of designing the shoe and the look of the shoes, because they look so cool. Honestly, some of y'all kid shoes, I'm like, do they have adult sizes? Because I legitimately want some of those kid shoes. So tell everybody about the process of designing the shoes and making them look just like any other shoe.
Okay, perfect. I'd love to. Okay, so what does it take to design a shoe? So that's really Darren's space. Darren's in the product development side. But essentially what you do is you need to work with the factory. And oftentimes you don't go directly to a factory. You work with some sort of agent or some sort of sourcing partner where they're the ones that will be making an actual prototype. And then once that prototype gets finalized, that's when you'd put in your order with the factory and they would make a lot of shoes. Like 1,200 minimum is typically the norm. But then you have all your different colorways and stuff like that. So the numbers just get big in a hurry. In terms of deciding on what the shoe looks like and what the colors are going to look like, for us, that has been an evolving process. Early on in our business, we started with a very small run just to test the market, just to see how the market would reply or respond, if they would like the idea of what we're doing. So for that, we funded that with a Kickstarter campaign and just came out with very just neutral colors just to see how it would do. And everybody loved the idea. So it was an incredibly validating moment that encouraged us to keep going forward. So the next step was be like, okay, let's see if we can get into some stores. And we brought someone on the team that had some connections to both Zappos as well as Nordstrom. So we were able to meet with some of their buyers to get an understanding of what they were looking like in terms of material and color, because they were already on board with the design. But then it was a matter of like, okay, if we bring a red shoe or a gray shoe or a green shoe or whatever it may be, is this something you're going to buy? So we worked with them a little bit and then worked with a factory to make those colors. And when they came in, then we distributed them out to our two retail partners at that time, which was Zappos and Nordstrom. And more people started to learn about the brand, which then generated more sales, which allowed us to make more shoes. So that was the cycle.
So did you expect the response to be as like phenomenal as it was, or are you still blown away by the response?
I'm still blown away. I use the word surreal quite often. It has been a very surreal experience. we, like, much of our success has been rooted in building strong relationships, and through those relationships, word of mouth. So one example that happened with us early on, it was in September of 2018. There was a mom that went into a Nordstrom in Minnesota. It was the Mall of America. And she had a very positive experience, went home, made a Facebook post about her experience buying shoes for her daughter. And that particular post, there wasn't a whole lot to it, but it was just an authentic testimony of a very positive experience. That post was shared 280,000 times in 3 days.
Which is ridiculous, by the way.
Yeah. And now lifetime, I mean, it's over 500,000, but early on, like 280,000 times in 3 days, it was indescribable. Just watching the amount of people that were reaching out to us was staggering. And at that time, we had a website, but not an e-commerce site. Our website, it was just pointing traffic to Nordstrom and Zappos, because those were the only places that one could buy shoes. So people around the planet were reaching out, wanting these shoes. Both entities sold out of all the shoes overnight. And then it was a matter of, like, oh my goodness, how do we make more shoes as quickly as possible to be able to get these out to this audience that is demanding the brand? So I guess that was what you call a good problem. Like, the demand was there.
Oh, yeah, that's a phenomenal problem to have.
But it was tough because we wanted to get the shoes out to so many folks, and you just can't make a shoe overnight. It takes some time.
Yeah, that is awesome. And how I got involved in Billy was it kept showing me these ads, because I'm in a lot of disability groups. So it kept showing me these ads, and people kept saying how great they were. And we had the toughest time finding shoes, right? So when we got new AFOs, I'm like, this is an excuse to try those shoes and nothing else. So they'll stop showing me those dang ads. And we fell in love with the shoes. Honestly, I was joking with my parents. I'm like, I can now officially be a shoe addict because I have shoes that I can put on and take off.
Oh, that's awesome. That warms my heart. That's amazing.
So any plans to expand the brand into, like, pants and stuff?
That's a great question. We did have apparel. We've sold out of all our apparel, so you can't find it on the website right now. But that apparel is more like sweatshirts and t-shirts and more branded stuff. When it comes to an actual, like, pant line, it's not in our plan yet. I don't know if unless they get there. There's so many other brands out there that we would love to promote. Is Adaptive, for example, they're out of Toronto.
How do you spell it? IS Adaptive?
Z.
Okay. Yeah, I'm going to write that down right now.
Okay, awesome. Yeah, Is Adaptive is a good one. I buy my pants from an entity out of Germany. It's called Rolly Moden. I bought my pants from those guys for the last 25 years. They're incredible. But for those ones, you have to pay some shipping and stuff like that just because they're over in Europe. And I know there's other entities in the United States. I just don't recall off the top of my head what their names
are. That one you just said again? I'm sorry.
That one's Rolly Moden. So Rolly Moden. The wild one for me was Rolly Moden. So I've been buying pants from Rolly Moden for years, from a long time. And then Rolly Moden actually reached out wanting to carry our shoes. And someone on our sales team reached out to me going, okay, like, Rolly Moden, there's some entity out of Germany. I'm like, oh my gosh, Rolly Moden, I love those guys. So that meant so much to me when those guys came carrying the Billy brand. I was like, man, I love your pants so much. They're the only pants that I wear. The big thing for me with Rolly Moden was the length of the leg, just because I have really long, I have long legs, and all the other brands out there that I was looking at, when I sat, I'm always in a seated position. My pant leg would be way up above my shoe. And Rolly Moden was the only one that I found that had the longer leg. I know there's other brands out there now that can do it, but I've just so locked into the Rolly Moden fit, I just haven't changed.
Like, they're easy on, easy off too, I would suspect, because.
Yes, most definitely. They have a really long, the zipper, it's really long in the fly. And then the actual in the seat of the jeans, there aren't any seams. So I mean, like, okay. For example, no back pocket. So when you sit down, you're not at risk. This is a risk of, for me, like just having, if you're sitting on some sort of seam, it could create an irritation, of which I wouldn't know because I just don't have sensory in that area.
Okay. Because I've been looking for some easy to get on pants. So those are two good places to start. Great, cool. Is there anything you would want to add before we get off here?
Actually, you know what? I just thought of another pant. Be free. Okay. I would check those guys out. Actually, that I would say Be Free would be the most easy on, easy off pant out there.
How do you spell it? B-E-F.
Yeah, that's it. B-E and then F-E-R. F-E. Like, what am I talking about? B-E-F-R-E. Be Free.
Okay.
Yeah, because their pant has a zipper that goes all the way up along the side. So those are super easy to get on and off.
I'm about to flip those up right after we get off here.
Okay, cool. I don't know. I don't have anything off the top of my head to add. Is there anything else you want to chat about?
Not really. I just wanted to make sure there wasn't any pressing thing that you wanted to get to that we hadn't got to yet.
I would just say we just really appreciate everyone's support of the brand. This has been
it's awesome. I love how you guys are committed to inclusive design and disability owned, and it's just awesome.
Yeah, we wanted to take fashion and function and smash those two worlds together, really in the spirit of inclusion. And we just remember, when we made our prototype and I tried it on, we wanted to share it. We just remember in grade school, kids on the playground, if they were wearing something different, everyone around them would remind them of wearing something different. And it's not because that kid wanted to wear something different. It's just like they didn't have any options. So we wanted to be able to create something where someone that needs a functional solution is going to be excited about it. But it's not like you need to have a functional need to wear the shoes. We wanted to be able to make something that anybody would want to wear. Reverse that narrative going, oh my gosh, I see those. If someone sees me wearing a pair of shoes going, like, where did you get those? I want to get those too. Where we can all level the playing field and just create this level of equality. So that was what we were driving for. And so many people have gravitated towards that, which just thoroughly warms my heart.
Yeah, I was having somebody over at the house the other day and they were asking me like what type of adaptive equipment I had. I think that's how we got on it. And I said, oh, I love these shoes, because I show my shoes off to everybody now. And they're like, oh, my daughter would love those because she hates tying her shoes and you don't have to tie them. And their daughter was perfectly able-bodied. It is for everybody, really.
Yep, that's exactly that scenario you just painted. That's exactly what we're going for. I'm curious, what shoes did you get?
What shoes did I get? What pairs do I have?
What color?
These are the black athletic ones. I have the boots and I have the pink high tops, and then I have the white. Do I have the white high tops? Yeah, I think I have the white high tops too. And I also have the slippers, but I don't wear the slippers very often because there's not enough tread for me to stand up in them.
Gotcha. Okay. Wow, amazing.
Yeah, so all my shoes are Billy, apparently. Thank you for doing this today. I'm so glad you were here. And we will see you guys next episode. Bye, guys.
Thank you for joining us. We hope you enjoyed the show. Remember to follow the show and our guests on social media and subscribe to the show on YouTube or in your favorite podcast app using the links in the show notes. If you're listening on the podcast app, please remember to rate and review us. See you.